afternoon, everyone. I was relieved, actually, when I was assigned this chapter because it's one I'm fairly familiar with. And then I started working on it, and I wasn't as relieved because I realized it's good material for a series of lectures rather than a 15-minute talk. So I'm going to try to rush through it because I really do look forward to some of the comments of the brethren, but hopefully not so much that we lose anyone. All right, so Daniel chapter 2. Now, the first thing I want to do is just go through a few significant points before we get to the dream and the interpretation of it that I felt were worth pointing out. First off, we have the introduction. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His spirit was troubled and his sleep left him. Now, most of us have dreams when we sleep, but they're not this type of dream. Nebuchadnezzar had obviously something on his mind that was bothering him, and this dream was associated with that. He tells him later, Daniel tells him later, that God has given him the interpretation that he might know the thoughts of his heart. So Nebuchadnezzar has a significant dream, one that bothers him enough that he loses sleep over it. And he really wants to know what this dream is. The King James Version is the one I've always been familiar with this chapter, and when I did some research, I accidentally stumbled upon an alternate translation that gives a much different meaning in verse 5. In the King James Version, it says, "The thing is gone from me," which I always took as, "I forgot what the dream was." This is from the ESV. "The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, 'The word from me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you shall be torn limb from limb, and your houses shall be laid in ruins. But if you show the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor.'" Anyhow, I'd love to hear some comments from some of the brethren on whether or not it was actually a forgotten dream, or perhaps was the idea that Nebuchadnezzar was proving his servants to see if they really had the power to interpret the dream by requiring them to show it first. At any rate, it is significant because no one else in the empire could tell the king his dream unless they were shown of God. So God is working here to distinguish Daniel as the interpreter of the dream so that the true interpretation is made known, because God wants his words spoken truly to the king. As a matter of fact, that's exactly what the wise men told the king. No one can show it to the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh. So even the wisest men in the empire of Babylon all agree that if the king is going to be told this dream and its interpretation, it will be by direct divine revelation. And that sets the stage for Daniel's interpretation of it. Now, when Daniel hears of the matter, what does he do? Well, the first thing he does is goes to his house and tells his friends. Now, these are his brethren, you might say, in worship of the Lord. He tells Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, and so that they might all pray and seek mercy from God. See, Daniel didn't just assume that, oh, I've been serving God all this time, he's going to tell me the dream and save my life. Rather, he realized his position as a servant of God and requested that God be merciful enough to extend that knowledge to him. It's a great example for us. And then he is in a night vision, he's told the dream and the interpretation, and he comes before Nebuchadnezzar and says, "But there is a God in heaven. Even though all your wise men can't tell you, even though the pinnacle of man's knowledge can't come close to revealing this to you, there is a God in heaven that reveals secrets and makes known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days." And goes on to tell him what the dream and his vision was. Now remember, this was 2 years into Nebuchadnezzar's reign. So that places us at about 595 BC. Nebuchadnezzar has these dreams. "You saw, O king, and behold, a great image." And he goes on to say it was dreadful and terrible. I'm not sure if this image is a very good representation. I'm not sure how well you guys in the back can see. I apologize for that. But I kind of imagine something like Arnold Schwarzenegger in one of his old war movies, you know, something that would really scare the king, because it made a big impact on him. Anyhow, so if we can keep that idea that it was a big impact on him, then it may help us to put ourselves in King Nebuchadnezzar's perspective. It says, "You saw, king, and behold, a great image. The head of the image was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its middle and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, and its feet partly of iron and partly of clay." So here we have four main metal components: head of gold, breast and arms of silver, midsection of bronze, legs of iron, and then the last one is a mixture of iron and clay. So we're looking for the antitype of these four sections, distinct sections, and then that last, which happens to be unique. And then we come to the climax of the dream. As you looked, a stone was cut out by no human hand, and it struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold all together were broken in pieces. And the wind carried them away so that no trace of them could be found. But the stone became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. Now that Daniel has established his authority as someone who has divine guidance by revealing the dream, he goes on to give the interpretation. And at this point, Nebuchadnezzar can be sure that the interpretation is true since the dream has been established. He says, "You, King Nebuchadnezzar, are the head of gold. Another kingdom inferior to you shall arise after you, and yet a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. And there shall be a fourth kingdom, strong as iron. And as you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, it shall be a divided kingdom." All right, so what we're told here is that these four sections of different types of metal represent four kingdoms or world dominions. And that's not only significant to this prophecy, but also to others. When we take the clues that we're given from interpreted prophecies, we can apply those to prophecies that have not yet been interpreted for us. So we might keep that in mind as we look at this image. Also, this feet and toes, part of iron and part of clay, is a divided kingdom. In other words, it's not like a world empire such as Babylon. Well, let's take a look at the events surrounding Daniel chapter 2. About B.C. 4000 is the creation of the world. The dating that I did was 2460 was the flood. These are just rough dates, really. 2100, the promises to Abraham. Then you have, they went down into Egypt, the Exodus. The temple's built by Solomon under the king. Shortly thereafter, the kingdom is split. And then in 586 B.C., Jerusalem is destroyed by the Babylonians. Roughly two years after, King Nebuchadnezzar has these dreams. 2 years after he's been put in power. All right, so this head of gold was Babylon, which destroyed Jerusalem in 586 B.C. That was the head of gold. Now, what came next? Well, after Nebuchadnezzar, when his descendants were on the throne, the Persians came in with the Medes, and they conquered Babylon. That happened in 539 B.C. So there we have the answer to the question, what is this next kingdom, the breast and arms of silver? And then when we look at world history, we find the next great empire on the scene was the Grecians under Alexander the Great, who conquered the Persian Empire in 330 B.C., corresponding to the Belly of Brass. Now, Rome was a city-state within the Grecian Empire, which grew to such power that it dominated the rest of the empire, and Augustus becomes its first ruler in 63 B.C. And here we have the Legs of Iron, the Roman Empire ruling the earth. Now, that empire lasted for quite some time, but it split into the Eastern and Western Roman Empire, which can easily be associated or remembered by association with the two legs of iron. There are two legs, and the Roman Empire was split into two parts, Eastern and Western Roman Empire. And that happened around AD 395. Now, the Western part of that empire disintegrated around 476. At least that's a common date to end that empire. Of course, that was a series of events. The Eastern Empire falls to the Turks in AD 1453, so it was much longer lived. These are your two legs of iron. Not to step on any toes, but in Daniel chapter 7, we'll read of the four beasts, and those go into the Holy Roman Empire. It's not mentioned specifically in this vision, but just for the sake of a full historical argument, in Daniel 7, it says, "But the court shall sit in judgment, and his dominion shall be taken away to be consumed and destroyed to the end." And this is speaking of the end of the Holy Roman Empire. Here's an article from Wikipedia.org. Napoleon's empire ultimately suffered military defeat, resulting in the restoration of the Bourbon monarchy in France. Now, here's the meat, though. The wars resulted in the dissolution of the Holy Roman Empire. That happened in AD 1806. Now, under Napoleon, democracy had a strong birth in the French state. And since then, we have entered the feet and toes, part of iron and part of clay. Daniel says, as you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, it shall be a divided kingdom. But some of the firmness of iron shall be in it, just as you saw iron mixed with soft clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly iron and partly clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly brittle. Now, since the end of the Holy Roman Empire, there has not been a single world power. Rather, there's been a mixture of strong and weak nations, just as we've all seen throughout our lifetimes and for several generations before. So this is where the climax comes into play. We're told, after this, the stone cut out by no human hand struck the image on its feet. Now remember this, the feet represent the divided nations that we see in the world today. So these divided nations are struck by a stone, and it breaks them in pieces. Then, the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold all together were broken in pieces. Well, notice those are two events. And the wind carried them away so that no trace of them could be found. In other words, they're completely annihilated, completely destroyed. But the stone became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. So we're in the feet and toes. We're looking for a stone to come, which will break this division of nations and then destroy their semblance of power and establish itself as a ruler greater than any of the past empires over the whole earth. When we put this with what we know about the millennial reign, we can see the significance of the events that it unfolds for us. Now notice I don't have a date at the beginning of this timeline, and that's because we can't know exactly when Christ will return. All we can know is very soon, looking at the condition of the world today and the prophecies we've been given. But this timeline starts with an event, and that's Christ's return. Now after Christ's return, the dead are raised. That's the responsible dead. And then we have the judgment take place where all the responsible dead who've been raised and all those in the earth that have been gathered who are responsible are assembled for judgment and either given their reward or their punishment. Now at this point, Christ is most likely not very politically visible. But after the marriage supper, he and the saints march on Jerusalem to rescue it from the Gogian host. This is when the conglomeration of nations that comes against Jerusalem is broken by the stone. Now after that period, Christ sets up his position as the ruler of the world. It's hard to imagine all the nations of the earth submitting simultaneously to a king who they see as foreign. And so we know that after that time period will be a breaking of those nations who resist Christ's will, who won't submit to his law. And I believe that is the corresponds with the crushing of that image by the stone, when it's all ground to powder. And in that time where Christ sets himself up as the ruler of the earth and destroys any opposition, that's when the semblance of nations or this all the organized powers are dissolved, and so that there's no more trace of them seen. And in their place, we have the stone that becomes a great mountain, which is Christ as ruler of the whole earth. And that wraps up the dream and its interpretation. And so I just put that all together on the timeline here. And so we can see distinctly from the time that the dreams were interpreted, four distinct kingdoms. First, the Babylonians, starting in 586. The Persians, around 539. Greece, in 330 BC. Rome, in 63 BC, all the way through to the present day, where we have, or close to the present day, where we have a mixture of nations, some of which are strong and some of which are weak. And we are really knocking at the door of that stone coming in and establishing itself as the sole ruler of the earth. And I might leave you with a verse from 1 Corinthians. When all things are subjected to him, then the Son himself will also be subjected to him, put all things in subjection under him, that God may be all in all. I look forward to hearing the comments from the brethren.